Welcome to the Best Living Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet. Breathe, eat, sleep, thrive in every aspect of your life. What does thriving actually mean? Thriving is not a word, it's an action, a way of living. And that's what the Best Living Show is all about. So get ready, step into a new narrative and find a new way of being. There's a beautiful connection, a spark that flies at the intersection between the genetic code and your internal guidance system. We're going to throw away the culture that will tell us that thriving is something only for a few. Every one of us is unique. It's our time to discover why. The Best Living Show starts now. Hello, and welcome to The Best Living Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet. And, you know, throughout life, we can face dark times, and trauma can affect us physically, mentally, emotionally, even epigenetically. Trauma can leave chemical marks on our genes, which can be even passed down to future generations. These marks can cause epigenetic alterations. Dr. Melissa, in a previous talk, described this as like scratches on a CD. And it can alter the mechanism in which genes are expressed, altering how they function, how they read. Adverse experiences during our early life can affect and if affecting gene expression can really start to affect the stress response, brain development, and our emotional regulation. Trauma can disrupt the normal functioning of our hypothalamic pituitary axis, which is responsible for regulating the body's stress response through hormones such as cortisol. Chronic and severe trauma can lead to dysregulation, which leads to these abnormal high levels of cortisol and stress response. And this is associated with mental health conditions. However, research is showing that these modifications can be reversed. And we are looking at ways that these epigenetics can be resilient, these changes, and really providing environment for that. So, you know, it's something that I've personally wondered about as I've worked with people throughout the years. Why are some people so resilient after trauma and others are not? And I've come to understand that resilience is not about avoiding or denying the impact of trauma. Rather, that it involves effectively coping with and overcoming the effects that will lead to a fulfilling and productive life. So that brings me to the subject of today's show about triumphing over trauma. I'm honored to welcome Jesse Torres to the show. Jesse is a certified master peak performance and transformation coach with additional master certification in meditation, heart math, Reiki, domestic violence counseling. She's coached thousands of high-performing people from all walks of life, from all over the world, who have achieved success at the highest levels of fulfillment. She is the founder of Fierce Grace Transformation and has a course and coaching program that helps high-performing entrepreneurs and leaders move from burnout and high stress to passion, purpose, and impact. She is driven to discover the truth of the client's deepest potential and unlock the limitless opportunities that leave others in the dark ages, bringing all levels of mindset, energy, spirituality, strategy with authentic client-driven approach. Her journey is filled with many experiences that she brings to the table, including child abuse, loss of her brothers to murder, a marriage that left her, as she describes, being apathetic, emotionless, and spiritually dead. This left her living in a life that was filled with fear, limitation, and darkness of shame every single day. However, she turned that suffering and pain into purpose and passion, and now she helps people all over the world really transform their narrative from victim to victor, to find the courage to take the small steps that are needed to peel back the layers of fear and realize their full potential and live big lives of their dreams. She is the true seeker of light in the darkness. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, Rachel. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And there's so much in your background, and we talked before. You have such an incredible story. Can you like just start to tell us why did your personal story lead you on this from kind of some of the things that you experienced through your life and transforming it into a triumph that you're now bringing to the world?
Sure. I appreciate the question. You know, in all honesty, it started and was birthed from a moment of survival, right? So coming out of, yes, child abuse, and then right into an abusive marriage for the next 18 years of my life. So my first 18 years at home, and then my next 18 years in this marriage. At 38 back then, I was apathetic, like I said, and I was having to really feel like I was a newborn. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what my favorite color was, what kind of food I didn't know, because I literally molded myself to be anything that I needed to be in order to keep the peace in my home, because it was that explosive.
It was basically your survival. And yes, you just molded to that.
Yep. Whatever I needed to do, if I needed to fix the car, I would go fix the car. If I needed to, you know, like whatever it was, I made sure that I molded whatever his beliefs were, my beliefs were. And so I came out of that completely, like, again, in massive survival. But once I decided that I wasn't going to stay, because when I say I was apathetic, I was praying for somebody to blow the red light. Now, from that, I didn't think there was a way out. Mm. I didn't think there was an option. The way I was raised, who I was in this, divorce wasn't an option. I was just, and my kids wouldn't allow me to make the decision to take my own life. But I was willing it to be happen because I didn't see another way out. And what happened, which is so powerful in our ability to be helpful, was an act of kindness, an act of kindness that I didn't know to call it that at the time. But what I knew is that these people, I thought, I don't know what's happening here, right? Because my father had told me everybody secretly wants to get in your pants. My husband said, hey, people want to wreck a good marriage, so don't talk about it. So I didn't trust anyone. And these people were kind. And I thought, I call it short circuit moments. It's like, I don't know what this feeling is, but if it's available, then life is worth living. And it gave me the courage to make that decision. Now in massive survival, I'm like, I need to figure this out. Mm-hmm. I need to understand why my dad did what he did, why my mom ignored me, why my husband did what he did, and why I allowed it. Mm-hmm. And I got an insatiable hunger to understand human beings and why we do the things we do. Like, you know, when you talked about your introduction and what we do from trauma and how we behave and what our reactions are from that trauma, it's an unconscious conditioning.
Yes.
I didn't say I'm going to claim shame as my personal identity. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens, right? I didn't say I'm going to claim I'm gross and nobody's ever going to love me. I adopted that identity. I gave that meaning. It wasn't my truth ultimately, but at that time, that's the only truth I knew to have.
Yeah, much like you said that you kind of adapted to survive the situation you were in, you also took on almost that personality, or that, like, I think you describe it as an armor. You put on that kind of suit of armor that says, this is kind of how I need to be and how I need to feel to survive this situation.
Completely, completely. I didn't know any other way. And so it's that heart armor that now I'm building because I think it's protecting me. Right. Oh, so I need to just continue to stack that. And it moves me away from my actual divinity and the beauty of who I really am. But at the time, I don't know it. It's just my survival mechanism. And then we go through life wondering why we feel limited, or why we can't accomplish our dreams, or why we can't move forward from internal sickness, right? Mm-hmm. It's because our inner world is still adopting that belief. And a lot of it is unconscious. Like I said, it's just the navigation of the human experience and the meaning we give what happened.
Yeah, I can see that, you know, in your story, because it happened to you as a child and then continued on to as an adult, you really didn't have a sense of how things could be different. It's not like you had a childhood that was good and then an abusive husband. You went from one abuse type of abuse to another type of abuse. And so really there was nothing for you to know that difference until people started to be kind to you.
Right. That's right. And when that happened, I was like, I don't understand. I didn't understand somebody doing something without wanting something in return.
Right.
Because that had been my journey. Right. And so when that happened, I was like, I don't know. I don't know what this is, but when I'm here, I'm alive. When I'm home, I'm dead. Mm. And that's how I felt.
So you really started to feel that. So was there a particular turning point for you where you just said, okay, this is it, I'm going? Or was it a gradual thing that happened as you spent more time with other people?
Well, it was, I would say it was pretty quick. Like the minute I recognized that something had changed in me, like if there was a little flicker, and there had to be because I was still alive, there was a little flicker of light in me that what those people did, which they'll never know, is they fanned that flame enough to give me a breath of life. And it's almost like that's why I call it a short circuit moment, because it kind of like pulled me out of the hypnotic place I was in that said, this is the only way, you will die here. Mm-hmm. Right. And that was enough for me to go, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this anymore. And it's almost like a threshold that's crossed. And in that threshold, there's no going back. In fact, I specifically remember my ex at the time, was, there was a lot going on. He broke his legs and he was in a wheelchair trying to recover. And he had told me he'd been on suicide hotline all day. And, you know, and in the past, when he had done other things, he had threatened suicide. And I immediately acquiesced. Oh, no, don't do that. It's okay. I forgive you. I forgive you. I forgive you. And in this moment, once the threshold was crossed, he said that I've been on suicide hotline. And I remember looking in the depth of my soul, because I loved this man. Like I loved him like Titanic love. That's how I always say Titanic love. Like literally like Rose and Leo, I love this man. And in that moment, I looked deep within myself and I felt nothing to the point that I even felt kind of cold. Because I had so much love for this man. And I remember looking at him and I said, you can't do that. You have children. And I stood up and walked away. And that was the power that this moment gave me. So was it gradual? Maybe, you know, a couple of weeks from the time I felt it to the actual decision, but it was pretty instant, to the point that I think back now, I have twin boys and they were 17 and a half going through their senior year in high school. In retrospect, I might've waited till they graduated. But again, it was one of those things where once the decision was made, it was just like, I couldn't tolerate it, not one more day. And that was it. The threshold was crossed.
And you know, you talked about, you were at one point so low that you were kind of waiting for that. We call it in existentialism, the ultimate rescuer, which would be someone to take you out of that environment, right? Mm-hmm. So once you kind of crossed that threshold, how did your mindset and perspective evolve? Because it sounds like it just kind of like, okay, that's it, I'm done. But then what happened afterwards as you put things into motion? How did your mindset and perspective evolve through that process?
Well, initially, and where I had to come back and look at what parts needed to be healed, because at that moment, it was a very volatile time. And so I walked away with guilt, an enormous amount of guilt. I thought, I swore I would die in this marriage. I didn't want to break up the family. I'm the disruptor. I pulled the rug out of under all of us. It's my fault. This all broke apart. And I walked away with, again, but shame was already my emotional home. So I just, right. So now I just stacked on top of it. Right. So it's not like everything was solved the minute it ended. Right. It's just, it created the threshold for me to seek answers while I navigated the guilt that came with feeling like I messed up everybody's lives, because it became very chaotic after that. We were all in survival. And so I had to manage that. But that was another part of me that needed healing.
So, I mean, they talk about how we have to make meaning out of these experiences that happen to us to find that sense of purpose and growth. And so as you started to question that about yourself and the shame that you felt in the situation, or the guilt, how did you make meaning of this to be able to provide for yourself that resilience, that wanting to triumph over this?
You know, that's such a great question. And it's kind of like you're putting me back into that space of like having to think, how did Jesse think back then? And some of it is intuition. honestly.
Okay.
Because even though everything looked like I failed, right? I failed in my marriage. I ripped everybody's heart apart. I blah, blah, blah. At the same time, there was a resonance of rightness in the decision, right? There was a knowing. Mm-hmm. There was a knowing that that had to happen. And yes, there was a lightness. I didn't even know how to drive out of my own city. I had to like buy a Thomas guide back then. MapQuest was just coming out, you know, and I literally didn't know because I never left the city because right. That's how kept I was, right? So yeah. There was also this opening of like, wow, like who am I? I don't have to answer to anybody. This is so unfamiliar and exciting and scary. And, you know, so mm-hmm. there was all of that on top of, you know, just like, okay, I have to do something. And one of the things that attributed to me really coming out of it, because back then, you know, I mean, you go to therapy, you didn't have like coaches are all over mm-hmm. the place now, you know, and I was trying to figure out what is this I need to heal. I didn't understand, right, at that point. Mm-hmm. I'm just in survival. But one of the things that I attribute to coming out of that is grit. And one of the ways that I realized that I knew this was the right decision, even though it looked like bad on paper for me, I knew that I was so scared and I was uncertain because I literally went from my father's hands to my husband's hands to like, oh my gosh, right. I don't know who I am. And so I started to do things that challenged me. I started to, if it scared me, I said yes to it. And okay. and knowing that I had to build a muscle, you know, mm-hmm. and I had to get past my fears. And I did it from, honestly, I didn't like intentionally do it. It's just what birthed from me, knowing that I'm in survival and that I'm not going to survive if I don't do things that scare me, because right mm-hmm. now everything scares me, everything. Right. And if right. I'm going to survive and if I'm going to lead these three kids, then I need to step into an unknown. Mm-hmm. And I need to learn how to do it in a way that doesn't paralyze me. Mm-hmm. And so I did silly things. Like I took an improv class. Now you have to remember, like I looked down at the ground. I didn't make eye contact with anybody. I was shame girl. Right. And so to speak to people was scary because it got me in trouble before. Mm-hmm. And so I took an improv class and it was a very challenging. It was very scary. But the cool thing about improv is there's no wrong.
Right.
Like, whatever you say is right. And so it was kind of cool and it helped me come out of my shell a little bit. And then the next phase was taking an acting class. Mm. Like that was another level for me. And I was just like, oh my gosh. Now what that did for me, and the reason I'm sharing this is because, you know, let your mantra be, I can do hard things, right? Because what the mind interprets as hard is just unknown.
Right.
It's just unknown. It's unfamiliar. It's not something mm-hmm. I've done before. The role that I got in the acting class was Barbara Streisand in the movie Nuts. If you're ancient enough to know that. Yeah. and
telling my age.
Well, the challenge was, it's like, I couldn't have scripted this better. God in the universe is very, very, they have a sense of humor. Mm-hmm. The script and the role that I got, that she plays a prostitute in that movie.
Right.
And not only is she plays a prostitute, but she plays one that's being persecuted by her mother and stepfather as crazy.
Right.
And she was abused by the stepfather. Right. So the line that I got was the moment where she had to stand up and defend herself in court. She fired her lawyer. And literally the next sentence is going to be, we're going to sentence you to an insane asylum. And she had to stand up for herself and she had to claim what was true. And for me, that was 1,000 times outside my comfort zone. I had to curse. I would never curse. I mean, it was like all this stuff. And but what's beautiful about it is that because I was playing a character and I came from a good girl mentality, you gotta be a good girl, mm-hmm. I need to get an A in my class.
So, right.
You know, so I gotta play this character. So I gotta do it and do it good, right? So, and what it did is another moment that cracked me open. Mm-hmm. To seeing another part of myself, like, oh, like I didn't know she was in there or that she could do this. And so it was another like step in the right direction. It's mm-hmm. like, I feel like one of the things I look at is with all my tears, every time I broke down and had a breakdown, I would see my tears and I would step on them and climb a little taller. walk a little taller. Every breakdown was an opportunity to walk a little taller. And that's how I kind of got through.
Wow. Wow. That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot there as you were talking, like I was thinking about, like, and you know, I think, as you said, like these things that, are unknown to us, they are very scary. And so the thought of like kind of venturing out, you know, and doing these things on your own, at any point, did you feel like you needed to go backwards or run back to what you felt was the safety before, or did you just, it was a hard line that there was, you're not going back?
That's a great question. You know, I think that, so here's the thing. Sometimes we don't know the emotional trauma, right? Mm-hmm. We're smart mm-hmm. enough to see the cognitive understanding of like, mm-hmm. oh, the way he talked to me was not okay. Like right. he yelled at me, he was vulgar, he was blah, blah, blah. So like I knew enough to know that that would never be allowed in my life again.
Okay.
But mm-hmm. I didn't know like the emotional, like mm-hmm. why did I get into that relationship to begin with? Mm-hmm. Why did I feel I was unworthy of something better? Like mm-hmm. those kind of things I didn't quite know yet, but I was investigating mm-hmm. it. And so right. I was open to knowing, like, I got very resourceful. I read books. I started picking up books I would never read before. I started like opening my mind to what else could be possible that I don't know to know.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was thinking about like some of maybe other clients or maybe that you've met in your work, that there might be a tendency to go from one relationship to another because oh, yeah. there is that sense of knowing this is what I know about this relationship and my sense of identity, as you described it, you took on this sense of identity. I know that that's familiar, you said, but that all of this is unknown. So, you know, have you met other people that tend to like go backwards for a while and then come out again?
Yes, very much, very much. You don't know different. And mm-hmm. if you haven't, you know, looked at what is the part of you, the unworthiness part, mm-hmm. then, and mm-hmm. you still live under that umbrella, then it's like a woman that gets cheated on, you know, she mm-hmm. has this now belief that men cheat and then with those lenses, she brings that into the next relationship energetically right. and emotionally. And then she draws exactly that. You know, yeah. and so it's a repeat thing because it's familiar. I know this. This is just what mm-hmm. men do. Mm-hmm.
So right? until we really look at, like you said, these lenses, the filters that we're putting our life through, right? We don't, and as you said, we don't always know that we have these filters or these lenses. We really have to start to peel that back and start to look at it. But until we do that, we can often find ourselves in another situation that is bringing more of the same.
Well, that's what I mean about heart armor too. It's like right. the armor we build is that sense of protection because of what happened, but we don't realize it's armor in a survival place mm-hmm. that until we rip that down to find our divinity and our beauty and what we really are worth and our value and our magnificence, then we live from that armor. So we actually show up here as a version of us from all this protective layer. So mm-hmm. we have to, like you said, peel the onion or take down some of that armor to decide that you are worthy, you are beautiful and mm-hmm. made in divine perfection. And mm-hmm. once you do that, anything other than that or someone to treat you that way is just not welcome. It's just kind right. of like, nope, next.
Yeah. Thank you. Next.
Yes, exactly.
So as you talked about the improv classes you took, and I thought this was quite actually remarkable that you were led there, because it did allow you to put on another face while playing, right?
Yes.
It was like, I can like discover a new way of being, but it's in a very controlled environment. And that way it's a little bit safer, right? Than like doing it, just kind of doing it out and with other people in the open, if you like.
Right.
I mean, did you have that sense that I can really kind of try this on and see how this feels?
Completely. And again, it was scary. It's not like I was easy, but there's it's interesting. My daughter says fear is just excitement without the breath. And I love that saying because truly, like, it was scary, but it was exhilarating. right? It's like, ooh, I'm stepping to an unknown. This is so weird. Why did I do this? You know, yes, I wanted to turn around and get out of the parking lot, but there was enough in me that said, you know, do this because it scares you. You know, it's like we say, when you can't, you must. Right? Right. So it's like, when I say I can't do that, well, now I have to. And I've kind of lived with that mantra, putting those situations in my path so that I can break through the unfamiliar and get outside. It's like, I trained with a friend of mine and we would go running, and I gone streetlight after streetlight going, okay, I can't go anymore. Okay, next streetlight, and that's it. I can't do it. Yeah. And I got to that last streetlight and I finally stopped. And he goes, no, come on, let's go to the next streetlight. And I'm like, no, but you don't know I've done that 5 streetlights ago, you know? and he goes, come on, you could do it. And I'm like, I don't think I can. And I'm like, he goes, you're not going to die.
Yeah.
And I stopped and I'm like, huh. And that also resonates in my head of just like, yeah, it's unknown. Yes, it's scary. Yes, I'm not going to die. It's going to be okay. Yeah. Like I tell my kids, go screw it up. I told my clients that too. Go screw it up.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. As you're saying that, I'm like, oh, I'm thinking that's how I am sometimes in the gym. You know, my trainer will be like, okay, now you got to go up a level. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. And I'll fight him for a week. And like, this is too hard. And I just want to sit down and cry. And then, you know, after a while I get into the routine and now it's familiar, right? Because before I was maybe using some muscles that what I didn't use before, and yeah, they hurt, but I didn't die and I'm actually better for it, right? So yes. I love that analogy. It's great. So from this journey that you took, and then you started to try all of these things, have you put that into some of your practice with working with people, like trying to get them to do things out of like acting, doing improv, or taking on another role, or bungee
yes,
jumping.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, I know, right? That's still one I haven't done.
I haven't. I don't. I'm not going to either.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, yes, absolutely. Grit building. Now, there's all kinds of levels, right? I encourage them to find what suits them, but to find something. Right. So maybe it is an improv, you know, maybe it's having a hard conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's doing something that stretches you, that allows you to build that grit, right? Because again, if you do what you've always done, you're going to get what you've always gotten, mm-hmm. right? And you don't go to the gym lifting 10 pounds, hoping to build bigger weight, bigger muscle, until you build more weight, heavy weight, right? You're not going to build more muscle if you keep pumping the same weight. Right. So you need bigger resistance.
And calluses.
Yes, exactly.
And calluses.
Exactly. And again, the resistance is what you're feeling right now. That part of you that doesn't want to move forward, but you need that resistance. You need that to grow the bigger muscle. So how about growing a bigger muscle and courage?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. Well, we have come to the point of our first break in the show. But I love this conversation, because it really, like, you're describing it in such a way that we can think about it in everyday examples, right? Of how do we start to get that courage to overcome and do things that are outside of our comfort zone. And in doing that, we can then face who we are. And so we're going to dive into that a little bit more once we get back from our break. And we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Best Living Show. And we'll be right back.
Do you need help navigating the challenges of aging family members? Michelle Magner is a recognized expert in the field of caregiving. She understands the challenges we face as we care for those we love and shares her experiences with gerontology, dementia, and conscious aging through her podcast, Inspired Caring. Her one-on-one and group coaching programs equip you with the tools to handle stress and burnout with clarity and confidence. Visit michellemagner.com.
Thriving is not a word, it's an action, a state of being. Tune in to The Best Living Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet, every first and third Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will help you dig deep to find your state of thrive by looking at psychology, brain health, epigenetics, and more. We are more than our code. It's a different kind of code. It's the best living code. Visit DrRachelSweet.com. That's DrRachelSweet.com.
Are you ready to branch out, to take a leap of faith, to love yourself and others fully? Hi, I'm Erica Gifford Mills, founder of Balance Symmetry and host of Get Rooted Radio. If you answered yes to even one of the above, then this 12-week course is for you. The Rooted Life Group Coaching Series will give you the tools, techniques, and strength to be intentional in your pursuit of what sets your soul on fire. Find out more about this program on my website, getrootedradio.com.
Here's a quick tip from Jason and Patricia at the Ecosystem Approach Show. We're going to help caregivers connect with someone who has no ability to communicate or anyone who struggles with communication. This is for caregivers who are responsible for young children, seniors, or anyone without language. Try talking to their soul or essence directly. We do it all the time.
Get in a comfortable spot, relax, and close your eyes. Then just talk to them. Feel free to listen for a response. It's that simple. If you want to hear our show about the topic, go to our website, theecosystemapproach.org, and under the radio tab, search for The Story of My Mom.
Listen to our show every week. We teach you how to apply energy techniques to everyday life in ways that is practical and useful. See you Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, or find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Welcome back to The Best Living Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet, and we have been having a great conversation with Jesse Torres. Before the break, we were talking about going out of the comfort zone, trying new things, especially if you've been kind of leading a life that has been maybe smaller than you really want, and now you want a bigger life, how to do that. So get out of that comfort zone and feel that fear. And Jesse was talking about, like, you know, fear is excitement without the breath. And I love that, because a lot of people walk around every day holding their breath and they don't even realize it, that they're just always in anxiety and fear. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think you said it earlier, like the minute we're doing that, we're raising our cortisol. It's like our body's in fight or flight all the time, just wanting to, you know, uncertain about the world. The world is filled with uncertainty. But I think one of the things that has us in fear a lot is fear of judgment, right? It's like we go under these umbrellas of what society has told us is right or wrong, or you should think this way or should think that way, to the point that, gosh, you just like, I don't want to speak out loud. I don't want to give my opinion. I don't want to say anything, because what if I'm judged a specific way? And it keeps us limited, right? It's like, there's a lot of things that we can do, but we're afraid to fail, or we're afraid that we're going to screw it up, or we're going to do it wrong, and somebody's going to laugh at us. And those are like some of the biggest trauma moments of some of my clients, you know, where it's just like, oh, I have an actual client who got literally with the hook pulled off the stage when she was, I think, 12 years old, you know, and it was like her dancing. It was just one of those things. And she just lived with that in her system for so many years. And, you know, again, being judged, the audience laughing, you know, her getting pulled off because obviously she wasn't good enough. And so all of the meaning that gets made from that. And so we live through those lenses, and then we're afraid to do things, you know, and we hold our breath anticipating, you know, for many years.
When are we going to get that the hook again? Right.
Yep.
When is that going to come?
For many years, I went through, I would be in another relationship. And if there was traffic, because that was one of the things my ex would be enraged about. you know, I remember looking at the guy I was with, like literally my body tight and tense, just waiting for the rage to happen, you know? And when it didn't, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And both me and my daughter, and I was just like, oh, not everybody does that. But again, we don't even realize it. We're walking around that way.
Right.
And so I think that when we are able to heal from those trauma moments and we're able to fall in love with the aspects of us that went through it, mm-hmm. and we're able to see ourselves as the victor, not the victim, to be able to see the other side of the story. You know, I take my own journey and I see a little girl that, you know, built traps to warn her when her dad was coming. Mm-hmm. You know, I can see that as tragic because it is.
Yeah.
But I also see a very resilient, very creative, mm-hmm. very resourceful little girl. And that is also true. One mm-hmm. depletes me and makes me sad. And the other one empowers me and helps me fall in love with her mm-hmm. for being able to be that courageous. And I think that if we start to take the journey that our past actually can equal our future, we just haven't mm-hmm. been taught to find the good in it.
Right.
We haven't been taught to see that. And when we do that, we start to find that we were courageous and brave all along. And from mm-hmm. that, now we can start to do hard things. We can start to challenge ourselves. We can start to build that grit that you might have thought wasn't there before.
So as you talked about that and when you're making meaning of these situations that we have felt shame about or have some, you know, whatever that feeling might be about anxiety or guilt, are there ways that will help people look at that in a different way to find that purpose and meaning?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that happens is shame lives in secrecy, right? So we keep it inside. We don't share with anybody. We don't talk about what's going on. And today's society, there's so much personal development and there's so many books and so many seminars mm-hmm. and so many things to do. I believe that we are knowing our way out of healing. Mm-hmm. And now we have understanding of what to mm-hmm. do, mm-hmm. but we're not healed. And so when we learn the things to do, but then we find ourselves stuck again, it invites mm-hmm. a deeper level of shame. So the first thing I'd say is reach out. There's many people that would understand, start to talk about it, shine light on those things that you're most terrified of sharing. Now you don't have to go right in the deep end, but little by little, just kind of start to open up, start to share vulnerability. Vulnerability mm-hmm. is a superpower. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you're going to find that most people have compassion and understanding. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And for those that judge you, you know what? In a world of 8 billion,
you don't need them.
Is it possible that we're going to be judged?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So now that we know that, let's get on with our bad selves.
Right. Yeah. As you were talking, you know, what I was thinking was that you said, you know, kind of we're in this world of knowing, right? There's all of this help out there and we can read all of these things. We can go, this, you know, coaches, therapists, psychiatrists, whoever, and there's a lot of knowing, but that all lives in a higher level of cognition, right? It doesn't live in the emotional brain. And what you're saying is you have to get vulnerable to look at that emotion and then make meaning of that emotion in some way. And that's a little bit different because the emotion doesn't necessarily have words to it. In our cognition, yes, we can put words to all these things, mm-hmm. but how do we find that meaning in an emotion and turn that around?
Well, again, I think I do things like I separate parts of me, right? So there's the little girl, there's, you know, the wounded daughter, there's, you know, the woman that now entered a relationship that didn't serve, right? So there's different aspects of me. When I really look at the parts that are hurting or guilty or all of those emotions, I just go to where was the first time I decided that I can think of. When was that moment I decided? Like, I remember a specific moment where I decided my voice didn't matter. Just shut up, Jesse. Just take it. Your voice doesn't matter. And I made that meaning in that moment. If you can have that recollection and you can go back, and I do this with meditation or I bring people back to that moment, mm-hmm. and you can be witness to the child through parental lenses, through endearment, right? Mm-hmm. Not victimhood, because this is not to re-injure, right. but to go back and to see this beautiful child and the innocence and the beauty of the bravery it took to wake up one more day and still be a good little girl and to still smile and to still be playful and to still be, you know, well-mannered and to like, there's mm-hmm. so much beauty there. Again, we're not taught to see it. If we don't mm-hmm. look for the good, we will only remember the pain.
And so Dr. Pat put in the chat about the secret to persevering regardless of challenges. So this is a little bit of what we're talking about now. Is so, I mean, as we're looking at this and confronting this and becoming vulnerable, I mean, obviously we've got to have something, that grit that you talked about, to keep going while we're in this part of vulnerability. So what strategies have you found that are best for that? Because I can just see that people would start to become vulnerable, open that up, and then be like, whoa, I can't do this. How do we do that? And it was despite this challenge.
Of course. So I've recently been met with a big challenge in the loss of my second brother. And what I would say to that, and I know it feels counterintuitive, and I know that it might seem like it's really hard. Look for the good in the darkest moment. Look for the light. There always is one, right? It's like Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers said that when 9/11 happened, right, the children were scared because mm-hmm. the parents kept replaying the Twin Towers over mm-hmm. and over and over again, and they mm-hmm. didn't understand. He got down on their level and he said, whenever there is chaos, there's always helpers. There's always helpers. Mm-hmm. Look for the helpers. And it's the same thing about bringing light to the darkest moments. When I lost my brother in my deepest level of grief, I was able to see his daughters who had not met before coming together like they'd known each other forever. Mm-hmm. I was able to see people that posted on his Instagram how he changed their lives. I was able to see my family come together like never before. There's all this beauty in the midst of the pain. It's always mm-hmm. there. So my invitation would be, is to look for the good. Mm-hmm. Look for the good. I don't think God or the universe wastes the pain. I believe we do if we choose to. And if you're mm-hmm. willing to feel your feelings, but look for the gift, then mm-hmm. you will be able to start to open that up again so you don't live in suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm reminded of a story, and it was in a book, and I've been trying to think what book it was. And it was a man who was a victim of sexual abuse, and he just thought he was the only one in the entire world. And at some point he was in a group setting and he decided this was the moment that he was going to share and be vulnerable and say what happened to him. And he, you know, he told his story, and then he felt so shameful about it that he kind of left the room quickly because he was kind of like, oh, you know, what did I do? And then he said he had man after man come up to him and say, I'm so glad you shared your story because something similar happened to me. And in that moment, he realized he was not the only one that this had happened to. And God had given him that voice in that moment for him to let other people know that they were not the only ones, and there was a way to overcome this. And as you talk about, you know, talked about that, that was what I was thinking. It was like, there are ways that we can become vulnerable in a safe environment and then realize there's other people that can help us through this too.
100%. And you bring up such a great point about, you know, we need each other. We need each other, even mm-hmm. in healing, right? And now knowing as much as I know, when my brother's death happened, which was less than a year ago, you know, I had to freaking eat my own medicine. I had to like put all my practices in place and mm-hmm. and understand and try to really, really look for, you know, the good in this mm-hmm. and had done what I thought I needed to do for healing.
Right.
And just recently a friend of mine asked, so how about that grief? And it mm-hmm. uncorked a whole nother level of like tears and emotion. And wow. I was just like, huh, you know what I mean? It's like, mm-hmm. we need each other. We need to be witnessed. Mm-hmm. It's not you. Healing doesn't mean you go it alone and you right. just sequester yourself in a cave and cry mm-hmm. it out. That's cool if that's what you need, but to have each other so that, again, because it's the fear of that judgment, that man walked away believing he had just exposed himself and how even deeper levels of shame, but the beauty of the human spirit is to come together and to say, hey, you doing that helped me. That's where the healing can really start to come into place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think that that is one of the powerful things, like that in the beginning of your story, like we kind of come full circle here, you realize that there were other people out there that were kind. Now they may not have gone through the same experiences, but they were showing you that there's a humanity that's greater than what you were suffering.
Completely. Yeah. You know? I'm like, what is this? I don't understand. Yeah. I literally didn't understand. I just knew it felt invigorating and something in me turned on. Like I was like, oh, all of a sudden I popped out of that apathetic bubble that I was in. And that's something I want to say too, to Dr. Pat's question in persevering regardless of challenges. One thing I'd love to share is that there is a deeper resolve in each and every one of us that we just don't know yet. And sometimes we don't know what we've got until our knees hit the floor. Right. And, and like, even like to your point with your trainer, right. It's like, you know, no, I've given everything I've got. And then they're like, give me one more, you know, and then you're like pumping out another one, you know, and it's just like, there's always something more. And that's a playful way to do it. But again, in moments of sorrow or in moments of deep, profound challenges, there is a deep level of courage, of resilience in you that you just haven't met yet because you didn't need to, but trust that it lives there.
It's interesting because I can think of, you know, different situations over my own life where you kind of take that step back and you say, you know, what are my choices here? Like, I have to keep going. I have to keep moving forward. The only way is to go through this. If I don't go through it, then I'm stuck here on the other side of it. If I try and skirt around it, I'm not seeing that meaning, right? I'm not getting that truth out of it I need. So really, the only way is to feel this, to go through it. It's going to feel maybe like a hurricane when I go through it, but the other side is going to be blue skies and I'm going to feel better for it. And I think that people don't realize that they have, like you said, have that in them, that ability to embrace that experience, go through it, find the meaning in it, and then turn them, flip that script and go to the other side.
Well, as we say, you know, pain is a part of life, but suffering is a choice. And so, and also if you live your life looking in the rearview mirror, you're going to crash. Yes. Right. Yep. So
I use that one a lot. Life is not lived in your rearview mirror.
Yeah. And, and if we know that we've got to get to the other side, it's how do we choose to get there? Do we choose to get there in suffering? And, you know, and I'm navigating my mother who she's naturally very seen through wounded lenses. And I'm constantly having to navigate that the world is not a horrible place, you know, and because that's what she sees now, you know what I mean? And I'm like, no, mom, there's more good than there is bad. You know, I'm not naive enough to say there isn't darkness out there, but light is still winning. And we got to stay over here. We got to stay on this side and we got to keep looking for the light and you got to still be kind and you got to still be generous because your one act of kindness can trigger somebody to wake up enough to not take their own life like they did for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You just never know what you're being nice. And I mean, I was talking about this with someone the other day about how we've become in somewhat a world of this, just a quick email, a quick text or whatever, without that kind of feeling behind it. But we still have to, even in those short communications, we have to be kind and put that through in those messages we're sending, because you just never know how someone else is getting that on the other side. So I wanted to, you know, because we're going to come to the end of the show here very quickly. So I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of what you do. I know you started this kind of movement, the Army of Angels. I know I joined it.
Fantastic. You know, I love it.
Basically people seeking for the light. Tell us a little bit about that, and then and kind of what you're doing to really be that seeker of staying in the light and turning the darkness around.
Absolutely. It did birth from the loss of my brother and having to, like I said, eat my own medicine and look for the light in even the darkest moments. And so what birthed out of that is, how can we bring light into the darkest areas of humanity? And it's focused on bringing a group together to be able to collaborate. It's not for us to write a check to a nonprofit. It's more boots on ground, I call it, meaning that we create kindness coalitions, or we do what a friend of mine is doing. He calls it the $100 club. And it's basically, you go out with five friends, bring $100 each cash, and you each give your $100 to the waiter or waitress. So they walk away with $500, a tip, just to be kind to somebody,
right?
You know what I mean? And so that kind of stuff, or what else? Or maybe we go hold the hand of an elderly person that doesn't have a family, or read to a wounded warrior, whatever. But it's actually physically doing something to help shift humanity, because right now, especially with all the chaos in the world and what's going on, we feel helpless. We feel it's so dense, it's so heavy, we can't do anything. And I'm here to tell you, if kindness was enough to fuel the flame inside of me, that your one act of kindness can literally change the trajectory of someone's life. So Army of Angels is a collaboration of people that want to affect change in the world. It's a me, we, they concept. So first we're going to focus on the individual, make sure they're sovereign, make sure they're taken care of. And then we go to the we collaborate, we figure out what we want to do, where we want to put our focus. And then the they part is we go out and do it.
Nice.
So that's Army of Angels. It's a mastermind. And I'm so thrilled to bring it to life and to bring people that are like-minded that really want to make an impact in the world.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm excited to see what I can do as being part of that. Yeah. I mean, I'm just, like I said, I got the message and I joined and I thought, okay, I'm going to be a part of this Army of Angels.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. Well, I'm excited to have you, and yes, we're going to get moving forward, and it's going to be fun. We have a call a week, and that's going to be able to bring things to life, and we're going to start changing lives.
Right. So now we haven't had a chance to talk about kind of your programs, and I'm sure listeners want to know, how do they find you? Where on the interwebs can they find you? I know you've got a giveaway for listeners as well. Can you talk about that a little bit for them?
Sure. So my website, because what I do is I actually help people come out of their trauma. So turn pain into purpose, or trauma into triumph, and also impact. So I think that when a human being is unleashed and they're limiting beliefs are shaken off, then they're unstoppable. And now all they want to do is give. And so it's a trauma program. It's Fierce Grace. You can find it on unshakablelife.com. You go to unshakablelife.com. You can find all the information there and to schedule a call with me, and I'm happy to support you. And then we have ourarmyofangels.com to look at and discuss the website for Our Army of Angels, if you'd like to contribute there. The giveaway is a 10-step process to freedom. And it's something that I created in order to, again, when I was out without knowing what I was going to do in the world, it was one of the steps that I had to take. They're steps to get you out of your situation, even if it looks like there's no way out. Okay. So it's a guide to help you do 10 ways that you can do something right now today.
And that's on my show at notes, that you should be able to find that giveaway, and it's on Unshakable Life as well, correct?
The 10 step? No, this is exclusive for your audience.
Oh, it's exclusive. Okay. So you have to find it on the show notes. I know I put the website there for the download. So excellent. Okay.
Awesome.
And then, you know, as you're kind of building this army of angels and seekers of light, and really looking to kind of flip the script on this for humanity, where do you envision the future for trauma recovery and resilience building going with what you do?
Oh my goodness. You know, I see it evolving so grand that I believe that some of the most wounded people are the brightest lights in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If we understand that the depth of our darkness is converse to the height of our light, we would recognize that when we're able to be courageous enough to heal our trauma, we can actually be the brightest light out there in the world to help guide others out of pain. So I see it evolving. I see it expanding. I see it one arm after the other, like together, we do this together and we heal ourselves. We can flip this on its head. Everything that's happening in the world right now, when a human being is awake and that spirit comes alive, the light is so bright, it shifts humanity.
I love that. I love it. And it goes along a little bit with one of the questions I always ask my guests. And this is, you know, something that as we come to the end of the show, I ask is, what are you doing to intentionally thrive?
Every single day, condition my mind, feed my mind with what I need to keep me strong, because I'm human too. And it's not that I don't face challenges. So I'm constantly feeding my mind, whether it's podcasts, whether it's books, whether it's something that I need to condition myself every day. And I'm getting better at self-care, but I really value self-care. Yeah. Yes. But I feed my mind. Otherwise our mind can drive us crazy.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, as you were talking about that, I was thinking you know, feeding your mind and the cognitive area, but the self-care, the rest, I think is also very important, right? For the emotional part of us, we need that space to be able to look at that vulnerability and bring that out. So I'm glad that you mentioned that about getting better about the self-care. I think that is something that when you've gone through trauma, you feel shame and guilt, that is a very difficult one to do, because it's taking that time for yourself. It's so important, but I think as someone who might feel that, it's probably one of the hardest things. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, I agree 100%. Stillness. Yeah. There is a gift in stillness. There's a gift in meditation and just being with yourself and allowing the thoughts to go like crazy and just literally just give yourself that love.
Yeah. Oh, excellent. Excellent. Well, we have come to the end of the show. I've really thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you, Jessie.
You
it's
so
been
much.
Fascinating. Listeners, please make sure that you check out Jessie's website and get the download from the show notes. And I just want to thank you for listening to The Best Living Show. Again, I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet. You can listen to a replay of this show if you tuned in late, and all of the back episodes of the show at drrachelsweet.com. And you can join me next month on the first and third Thursdays for streaming live at 6 p.m. Eastern, The Best Living Show. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Best Living Show. I'm your host, Dr. Rachel Sweet. Breathe, eat, sleep, thrive in every aspect of your life on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Tune in Thursdays at 6 p.m. to continue your new narrative and step into a new way of being. We are not what people have told us we are. We are so much more than that. I'm going to help you thrive and get the answers you desire, not only in the external world, but on the inside. For more information, go to drrachelsweet.com. That's drrachelsweet.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers.